Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Before I pray for my wife, I listen to God about my wife.
Do you ever ask God about your spouse? This is Focus on the Family Minute, and Gary Thomas describes how he prays for his wife.
Remind me, of the grace that you've shown her. Remind me of the evidences of your work in her life. And then, Lord, remind me of why life is difficult for her right now. Help me see the challenges she faces. So then I'm trying to gain God's affection for my wife. I'm trying to gain understanding of my wife. And then I can go, okay, how do I help influence her and affirm her in a positive way? It's usually one thing where God says, why don't you help her grow in this, but you're supporting her to move in this direction.
More marriage insights from Gary at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles. Paso Robles Glass is exclusively presenting the new Milgard Trinzik Series windows and doors. If you're looking for a vinyl window frame that is contemporary with modern crisp lines, you'll love the new Trinzik Series from Milgard and Paso Robles Glass. Give your home a clean, sleek look with less vinyl and more glass to enjoy your view. Whether it's new construction or replacement, Paso Robles Glass has a window for you. And remember, they are the replacement window masters. Call Paso Robles Glass for your free in-home sales consultation for Milgard Trinzik windows and doors. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014. That's 238-4014 for Paso Robles Glass.
Get it fast, save some cash, Paso Glass is where it's at.
Hey Paso Robles, it's Jimmy Purdy with Shifting Gears Auto Repair, and it's time to smooth out your ride. With all the road repairs happening around town, your suspension and alignment might be taking a beating. So bring your vehicle down to Shifting Gears Auto Repair at 1621 North River Road. Our expert technicians will give your suspension and alignment a thorough checkup to keep you driving comfortably and safely. Don't let those bumpy roads ruin your ride. Schedule your next appointment today at 805-238-6202 or online at shiftinggears805.com.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
Now, the rest of the story. Savignon was a French science fiction writer who delighted in taking his readers out of this world. His best and most famous work, A Voyage to the Moon, went into 9 editions and 2 English translations in 37 years. In that novel, Savignon describes rockets as a propellant for a space vehicle. Rockets? Nobody had ever thought of that before. The transportation Savignon provided his fictional space traveler was based on Isaac Newton's third law of motion. And yet Newton himself would not define that scientific principle until 30 years after Savignon had died. In fact, Savignon was among the world's first science fiction writers. And as such, he inspired generations of dreamers. His space travel technology is remarkably detailed. Draw wind into a vacuum, I'm quoting, and rarefy it by glowing mirrors pressed icosahedron-wise within a chest, that's a quote. It's the ramjet principle, discussed more than 300 years ago. Savignon also suggested the specifics of balloon travel almost a century and a half before the historic balloon flight of the Montgolfier brothers. Savignon even proposed the invention of something we now recognize as the internal combustion engine. Savignon conceived of the material world as being composed of infinitesimal fragments called atoms. These, he said, comprise all known elements. All of the brilliant and prophetic ideas revealed in Savignon's writing were incidental, however, to the purpose of the writing. For the purpose of his writing was to make people laugh. Unquestionably, Voyage to the Moon was the most soundly scientific science fiction saga of its day, but its original title was A Comic History of the States and Empires of the Moon. Its sequel was another comedy, this one involving a voyage to the sun. Savignon's intention was satire. It was just coincidental that he saw so clearly into the future that he once accurately anticipated man's eventual conquest of space. Once he had reached his new worlds, he transformed them into absurd theaters through which to make fun of planet Earth. And nothing escaped his facetious scrutiny, not human nature, nor society, nor the world's most respected institutions. And yet Savignon himself would not live to enjoy the amusement or the consternation or the controversy his writing caused, because he died in Paris, July 28, 1655, at the age of 36. His comic histories were published posthumously. In fact, the uncensored French text of those works became available only as recently as 1921. As satire, his fanciful travels anticipated Gulliver's by almost 100 years. As science fiction, he foreshadowed today's. But in this belated acknowledgement, let it not be forgot that in addition to his literary achievements, Savignon was also the greatest swordsman of his day. As a writer and a dreamer, you perhaps never knew of him. And yet, because Edmond Rostand wrote a stage play about him in 1897, the world remembers only his swordsmanship and his colossal nose. For Savignon was baptized March 6, 1619, as Savignon de Cyrano II. You know the man who saw tomorrow as Cyrano de Bergerac. Only now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely. I'm your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There is no paywall. Today in the studio, I have Slo County Supervisor Debbie Arnold and businessman and local government watchdog Eric Gorham. We're talking a lot about the county budget. They passed nearly $1 million budget that they've taken their priorities.
It was a little higher than a million.
I mean, nearly a billion. I get it. I was fantasizing. And they've really taken road work out at a time. Roads are declining. Debbie, tell me what is going on with roads in the county. Yeah,
as I said, I had a few reasons why I voted no, and I just didn't want my yes vote on this particular budget this year. But ever since I've been elected, I've been trying to get, our road financing and funding for our roads to get them, make improvements. And I'm reading again out of the budget book itself, the board's adopted goal is to maintain a pavement condition index. That's the way, roads are graded, by this standard, to maintain this condition index of 65 or better, and then in parentheses, which is the statewide average. And I laugh because any of us that travel the statewide roads, we know, that's not a good average. But with the recommended level of funding this year from the general fund and the state SB one dollars, in other words, the budget we passed, it will be expected that the program can then maintain a PCI of only 60. So we're not even keeping up anymore unless we start, putting some more money on maintaining our roads. we will continue to see a decline in our pavement condition index number.
I'm going to ask, let's all talk now about what could be done to reduce a budget. I have never worked in county government, but I've watched. And one of the things that I've noticed over the last 10 years is this idea that no one in the county is allowed to talk unless they talk to a PR person. So they hire a PR person at whatever, $200,000 a year for every single department. And then you call the county, for example, when they were having a problem with food at a restaurant, and they're legally supposed to tell you there's a problem. But the lady at the county health department said, I've been told I can't talk to you anymore. You have to talk to a PR person. Then if you do get the PR person to call you back a day later, you ask them a question, they don't know how to answer it. They've got to call that person, who then they call me back, and if I have a follow-up question, they have to go to that person again. It is it's a serious waste of time and money. And I'll tell you, as a journalism major, PR is under the journalism window. I signed up 1 year for two PR classes, and it was all about skewing the truth. I actually I canceled the classes, switched out, and took the books back. I read the books and I thought, I don't want to do this. I could never do this. I don't care if it pays twice what a reporter makes. I don't like the idea of skewing. I want the truth. If I was a county supervisor, I would look at that, would look at, first of all, getting rid of PR. Eric, where do you think they could cut?
You know, what I look at is a lot of these grants that we get, basically the funding goes away the first year, and then we're stuck with the bill forever. And some of these could be tens to hundreds of million dollars a year that we have to pay forever, but they go, oh, we can't pass up this free whatever it is, you know, $15, $20 million. And if we do, like, how are we going to ever do this again? Well, they don't think about the liability in the years to come, and it adds up. It adds up to hundreds of millions of dollars over the years.
So you would not allow these new programs that have to be paid for decades and decades?
If we can't budget how to pay for them in the future, they're not part of last year's budget. Hey, we're going after this money, and here's how we're going to pay for this homeless shelter, this whatever it is, then we don't need it. If we can't figure out how to pay for the liability it's not budgeted for, I'm a hard pass on that.
And Debbie, you are a county supervisor. How are you, what would you, if you were in charge and everyone did what you said, how would you cut this budget back?
Well, I think the priorities would be more hard needs and functionally maintaining, you know, the county's the responsibilities the county has, and I mentioned roads. That's been a big one that affects everyone. But then again, and similar to what Eric said, you know, there's opportunities arise, and we kind of scatter, and we're always grabbing at lots of different things. We need a new this, or we need a new that. But until we can pay to actually maintain into the future the things that we've already committed to, I think that's where, we need to stop and know we have certain responsibilities to the taxpayers that they expect. And again, I think that's public safety and, you know, our road infrastructure and some parks and things like that that the county has taken on. But we need the money to maintain, and we seem to forget and move on and get new things and do new things, and we're, no pun intended, paying for that now, because a lot of our budget, we're not just our roads, but we're our maintenance program is
right.
Really funded.
I mean, secondary, I have two pet peeves. I guess I got to, the other one is just, we get these monies and we have staff, and it doesn't matter if it's city, county, whatever. They're almost trying to run it like a business and create more bureaucracy. And that bureaucracy, it adds up, you know, homelessness. How many departments do we have? You look at water, how many different departments are there? We go after these grants, we build a bureaucracy, but we're not building an infrastructure that brings in money. We're building infrastructure that costs us money. Again, it goes to the unfunded liabilities, but it just kills me that, you know, staff is almost treating it like a business. in business for me, I'm always trying to find ways to save money. You know, sometimes you have to spend money to make money, but I'm spending it personally to make more in the future, not to have more liabilities. And I feel like the bureaucracy we're building just creates these huge liabilities, and then they find ways to spend more money.
Before I came on the air today, I had a call. They knew Debbie was coming on the show today, and they asked me to ask her a question, but we're going to take a caller first. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask our guests today?
Yeah, as a former bureaucrat in the state and the county system, the easiest way to cut a budget is to cut the personnel years of your employees. We've got these employees that are working for the county. They're making huge amounts of money. Matter of fact, I was at a restaurant the other day, and there was a person there celebrating, who I knew, who was celebrating that they left their from their private industry job to be hired on by the county, saying that, oh, well, guess what? We can retire at 55, and we get this unemployment or this amount of retirement. And the other thing, too, the county is so bureaucratically heavy. Example is I had a client who's building a house outside San Luis Obispo in the county. And it was about this time of year, and we were putting the plans in to build this house. And one of the people said, the contractor said, well, we need to submit these plans to the county in August. And I said, well, why August? He said, because a big stickler over there at the planning department is on vacation then. We have another guy who's a lot easier to put the plans through. And I was sitting there thinking, well, why do we need these bureaucrats? And as far as homeless go, I wouldn't give a cent to the homeless. I look like these homeless are still living in their tents. They're still living down by the river. Where's all this money going? It's going to bureaucrats. It's going to people like Adam Hill's ex-wife and other people who are just making money off these homeless. The homeless aren't getting the money.
We're all looking at each other, right? Just that was the awkward
there's
silence.
There's three in the studio. Everyone's looking like, who's going to talk without interrupting? But the one thing that you said that I sure wholeheartedly agree with is that the labor costs in government are expensive and partially due to the benefits that go along with those jobs. But and that might be, you know, something else in the downturns of you first go and look at your labor force. But then again, it's hard to let it. It's a little harder, I think, to lay people off in these government positions. But it's true when you beef up your labor force, the cost really increases.
Well, I know somebody worked in maintenance, and they retired after, I think it was 28 years. They get a pension of $70,000 plus medical from the county.
Mm-hmm.
And would you get that if you worked in some private industry somewhere? And we're going to keep paying for that person retired at 55, mm-hmm. until he's probably 85 for 30 years. So this budget situation we're having right now is going to keep going. And if you had to use rainy day funds to fund it, what's going to happen next year? What's going to happen when we go into a major recession, or what's going to happen if we have a housing downturn where we have to take in less income?
Well, and I agree, and partially that was, I mean, I had two or three reasons that I didn't agree with this budget and didn't vote for it. But what you're saying, we've been warned about in the budget book itself and the messaging at the beginning that we're expecting now a downturn in the housing market. We're expecting fewer dollars coming from the state and feds next year, at least potentially. I guess you never know for sure. But so we're increasing costs when we're staring right in the face of the predictions that our revenue will continue to decline. So that's never a good recipe. And at some point, you know, it'll be problematic.
And right now,
well, the other thing too is just look at the amount of that people pay in income tax. There's only 50% of the American people even pay income tax, including the president and his son, who never paid income tax and all that ill-gotten gain they got from these third world in China. And I'm just sitting there going, well, who's paying for all this?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling in. We're going to take another break from our sponsors and be back with more with Debbie Arnold and Eric Gorham.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks finishing mixed as wholesale prices declined in May, adding to signs that inflation has been easing. The data follows the cooler-than-expected consumer inflation report, which was released on Wednesday. Tech stocks were the biggest gainers, with chip makers leading the charge and boosting the tech-heavy NASDAQ, which notched its fourth straight record close. Shares of Broadcom surged 12% for a record high after the semiconductor and software company's second-quarter earnings topped analyst expectations, and the company announced a 10-for-1 stock split. The Dow winners, Home Depot, J.P. Morgan Chase, and United Health Group. The Dow decliners, Amgen, Amazon, and Salesforce. The Dow falling 65 points. The NASDAQ up 59 for its 17th record close of the year. S&P 500 up 13 for its 29th record close of the year. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Gold demand is hitting record highs, but supply may not keep up. I'm Dr. Ron Paul, and I believe physical gold is the only way to truly protect your retirement savings from a chaotic world. To learn how to diversify your IRA or 401k into physical precious metals, text the word SHELTER to 989898 for a free info kit on gold IRAs from Birch Gold Group. That's SHELTER to 989898.
Message and data rates may apply.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Wesley here from Stove and Spa Center. I just wanted to thank you for letting us make your life more comfortable. You can see and explore all of our hearth products, wood, gas, pellet, and electric, to keep you warm and cozy during cold and wet winters. Or maybe you're looking to enjoy the benefits of what hot tub's soothing water can do for your body and to melt away the stress that living today brings on. Or perhaps you want to get in better shape this year by exercising in one of our swim spas. There are many models and sizes. We even have models with treadmills built into them. We have a large showroom with lots of the products we sell. Plus, lead times to get products have been greatly reduced. And of course, you can still get all the supplies and even get your water tested for your pool and spa. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Come check us out at Stove and Spa Center, 7485 El Camino Real at Tascadero, between Kerberel and Moore Roads. All products we offer are on our website at stoveandspa.com.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealy. I'm your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I have Slo County Supervisor Debbie Arnold and businessman Eric Gorham in the studio. We're talking about the different budget issues and different things at the county. Before I came on, I had a call, and they asked me, could I talk about, this person said, isn't there $18 million in government monies a county could get for free to put on the Bob Jones Trail? And shouldn't they use eminent domain and make the holdouts do it? This has been a big controversy. Debbie, how do you feel about this?
Well, this is a good question for me, because Karen, I've been consistent about this for many years now. And I don't have any complaints about the Bob Jones Trail. In fact, I think it's just been a wonderful asset to our county. The members of my family love using the Bob Jones Trail, but where I voted no several times now, and this has been going on for years, the county has applied for grant money to extend the Bob Jones Trail, and that's all great, but originally, they had to use the right-of-ways that they could secure, and when they finished getting that all taken care of, now they're left with small pieces of the trail where they're crossing private property and the property owners are not okay with it. And you know, the property owners, and it's, there are a couple that have been around a long time pushing back on this, and newer property owners as well, but they have concerns. When the homeless are using those trails in more remote areas, you get the homeless issue where you have people camping and living. You have the litter and you have fire, you know, some worry about the fires that start. So these folks have legitimate concerns, and the most importantly is they're saying, my property's not for sale. Our county has a policy that's been in place for many years. It was voted in by supervisors back in the day when trails first started to become a thing that the county was taking up for recreational purposes, same as parks, but that we would never use eminent domain for trails. And that's just being glossed over and ignored. And to finish this Bob Jones Trail piece, which County Parks has gotten an $18 million grant to do, they will need to use eminent domain. And I've not been in favor of that, never will. Property rights to me is a core of what's made this country great. And for recreation, I get it that once in a while eminent domain is used by our government and property is forcibly taken from someone against their will for schools and for right-of-ways for roads. But again, the county, the policy for a long time has been not for parks and recreation.
Eric, how do you feel about it?
Well, I think I'm on the same page as Debbie on this. And I think one of the other things, and you tell me if I'm wrong, Debbie, is when they asked, you know, when they went out to the state for the grant, they said they wouldn't be using eminent domain in the process.
What they continuously said is that they had the right of way secured.
Okay.
Pretty much, because they were applying for grants to put together their project. On the record, at least one property owner has letters and things that are on the record of these hearings that were, the purpose right. was to grant the money. So he's been upfront all along, this one particular gentleman, that no, my property is not available for this project. So redesign your project.
Right.
But my property is not available.
And when you have properties like this, I mean, I know, and it's, I don't so much see it as not in my backyard, but when you're putting a trail through a rural property that, you know, I mean, we all have gates for a reason. You don't want people going back and forth. And when you have homeless moving in, and I know a few people that have had this happen by their properties in North County, they've had people breaking in at night. They have problems with fire, like you said, but it's a theft. I had one guy that called me. I've known him forever. He has a bunch of outdoor lighting, and for some reason, this guy hiked up his hill, which is a massive hill, and just start cutting all of the lights off outside his property. And, you know, believe me, they're not paying to fix any of that stuff. So that goes to our insurance. It goes to your bottom, you know, right out of your back pocket. So I realized that there's a reason these people don't want this, and it can also threaten your home with fire, et cetera.
It's really a core principle of private property in that, you know, if you have the most beautiful piece of property in, you know, in a particular area, and all the thousands of people around you say, you know what, we want to put mm-hmm. our park right here, or we want, you know, our safe routes to school trail right here through your
right.
place. I mean, it becomes kind of a mob rule thing, and your private property can be taken against your will. So it's not that eminent domain, it hasn't been used before, but at least our, you know, we've historically decided what things are important enough that we in this country are actually going to use government control to take people's property against their will.
Right.
And it's been a short list. I hate to see that expand, because then where does it stop?
And are they planning on putting, if they put it, and I could be wrong on this, are they planning on putting it right through the middle of someone's property? Because how do you get to the other side?
In this case, I think the hang-up is not through the middle of the property. As a matter of fact, it's kind of on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the edge. But it is a more remote piece of property. And, you know, there are a lot of problems on public trails now, with including the Bob Jones Trail and including the more populated areas of the Bob Jones Trail, with homeless encampments, with litter, with fire, with, you know, public health and safety issues. So again, I think we almost go back to the fact that, you know, if we don't have enough money to maintain what we've got, how are we going to be able to promise that, oh no, we'll keep this up and we'll make sure it's safe and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, and you have to realize that a lot of the Bob Jones Trail has become a homeless camping site. So I would be opposed to all of a sudden, you know, somebody goes through my property and now there's homeless camping sites on my property, or what used to be my property, because they're not just restraining themselves to the trail. They're going to move into a more private place that's maybe wooded, that maybe is on your property. And then it becomes not only a liability, but a huge safety liability, especially for a couple of the owners on that trail are elderly people to go kick somebody off your property. And it also ties up resources as the, in the form of the sheriff and their fire department.
And I think it was yesterday, yesterday there was a sentencing of a man that was near a trail. There was a group of homeless people living near his trail, and two men got in an argument, and one man killed the other man, and he just got, I think, 54 years, and he won't obviously live 54 more years, but he was sentenced to, you know, basically life in prison. So there are a number of problems, and there's also the problems with fires. There are, you know,
we had houses burn in Paso. Literally, what was that, 3 or 4 years ago, we had 2 or 3 houses burned down because of the homeless in the riverbed. And so it is a huge liability. And if people look at what's happened, you know, you got to learn from the past. I would be very skeptical if I was one of those homeowners to want to let this happen.
But then you have the argument, oh, wow, it's free money, it's grant money, and we can't let it go. This is a different agency, but there was a school board. And it was Paso Robles School Board, and they were having a discussion, and they said, we're going to get millions in grant money to get more electric buses. And I think it was Kenny Annie said, but what about the infrastructure? Oh, it works. And he said, but you have a bus already. Is it working? Well, no.
It hasn't been working for years.
It worked for a couple weeks and broke. But they still have the charger, but it never worked. The battery immediately broke, and they couldn't get it fixed. So the one bus they have doesn't work, and they were talking about getting more, and they don't have drivers for the buses they already have.
And you'd be amazed when you plug in all those buses how much electricity it takes, and do you even have the infrastructure, or what's it going to cost to upgrade that infrastructure?
Oh, along those lines of, about accepting grants when you're not quite ready, we had that was the same issue that came up the other day at the Board of Supervisors. The $13 million Welcome Home Village would be a housing for the homeless. The county had accepted the $13 million grant, and they thought that they had a place for the project, and it hadn't been fully vetted, so the place they thought on South Higuera that they thought it was going to go, which, by the way, had already had opposition to it, and that hadn't been vetted at all, but... still, it had other issues that it legally couldn't be placed there. So then all of a sudden, we were asked to put it up on Bishop and Johnson.
Over by the old general hospital.
In a parking lot.
And the homeowners in that area had very little notice. There had been really...
Well, I think it went through planning in something like 13 days.
Well, it had no real review of the impacts.
Right.
So when you start to think again that 99% of the population, if they want to do anything on their property, there's a process, and many things are looked at before you're granted permission to build, or especially bringing 80 little residential units in. But during the hearing, we had a lot of public comment on that, but during the hearing, folks were talking about the doctor's offices that were in that area, that they had over 400 patients a day that would have to come in and drive through all the new 80 units to get to their doctor's appointments, etc. So point is that the project hadn't been reviewed, really had any review, let alone the kinds of reviews that people are used to. And it was a real hurry up, quick, where else can we go? And then that ended up, as the issues were brought forward, why it was a bad idea, it was discussed. And
what was the vote?
It was a 4-1, I think. Yeah. Gosh, I'm starting to sound like a broken record.
Right. Yeah. I think, it was fast-tracked, and it's also CEQA exempt, and it's getting, through the state and the county, this thing's going to be built before we know it, and the neighborhood really had no input. I mean, that was the biggest complaint I heard from people was, all of a sudden, it was over. You know, a lot of people in those neighborhoods found out after the fact from their neighbors. They never really got notified, etc. Just all of a sudden, you have 80 homeless people living. And these are nice neighborhoods back there. A lot of them have been around for a long time. They're established neighborhoods. They are very nice neighborhoods. We work up there all the time, and it's unfortunate because aren't they little like pallet homes or something? I believe so. And it's not really even a great infrastructure that's going in those neighborhoods.
And it's 80, but it's 80 units.
Yeah.
So it's not just one or two.
Right.
That's a project.
Seems like you could have built something. Yeah. But yeah.
And so that even takes you to the issue of the process, and we only use it when we want to. I mean, mm-hmm. How many people do we all know that had a project where there was a single home and they were just, it just took them years to get through the process to have permission to do whatever they were trying to do. So there we go again. When we don't want to use a process, we just say, never mind. But a lot of this has to do with the acceptance of grants, and then just let's get the money first, and then we'll figure out.
And I would equate this to a commercial project, and I know people that have been moving on commercial projects for 4 to 6 years because they're dealing with the neighbors. In this case, we just shoved it down their throats and said, this is what you're getting.
Yeah, with no review.
And the thing is,
very little review.
We all know what happened. During COVID, there was an idea, we're going to do a safe parking program, and we're going to have CapFlow running, and the county social services, the two of them will oversee this and make sure it runs fabulous. I think they gave CapFlow $9,000 a month, and even though they realized they weren't doing what they were paid to do, they kept paying them. And meanwhile, you had drug deals, murders, people overdosing, massive crime, and it was a mess. So now you're going to put something even bigger with the same group of individuals all together. There was an argument you shouldn't put everybody together because you're having people, a lot of them with mental illness and different issues, put together in a group, and that causes more problems. You should have smaller groups. But instead, now they're having a larger group.
Well, the project you're talking about, Karen, that was supposed to be safe overnight parking. And I did vote for that, just to tell everyone I don't just say no all the time. But what had happened there is the state had rules special and unique to the homeless population, but the overnight parking became a problem in the Los Osos area down around the community center, and per state, it's my understanding that you can't ask people to move along and not park if there's no place for them to go park and they're homeless. So after a while, the community of Los Osos was saying this is problematic, and it did involve there were drug paraphernalia in the tennis courts and so forth and so on. It was creating problems. And the board was asked to find or create a place, a public place where people could go overnight park. But several people had zeroed in on Dairy Creek and Dairy Creek Park, mm-hmm. County Park. And the history of that, years ago, prior Board of Supervisors, they voted to build a upper level high scale golf course, tournament level golf course. And the cost to build it was like $20 million, and you think, what? But it was kind of an environmental cutting-edge deal because they were going to use the wastewater from the men's colony to water the golf course. And then a tournament, the golf course would create income for the park system, and et cetera. Well, no one could foresee that we were going to let all the prisoners go home. And so then there wasn't enough water to water the golf course. And that all came to a head during the drought. So we had the vote. And I was saying, we have enough water in that system right there to, because it's over there where the jail is and so forth. The county had enough water in that system. Water would either go unused or it would be, it could be put on the golf course. But to keep that golf course going, to keep that income going, because we still to this day have a $500,000 mortgage payment. Every year we have to write that check. And the golf course was paying its way. But nope, we all got caught up. It's a drought. We shouldn't be using the water. So consequently, the golf course was cut in half. But there were some other income drivers put in the park. And one was a camping area where motorhomes could park. Mm-hmm. And they pay a lot of money, apparently, for overnight parking there, the motorhomes in the very nice campground. So when they said, let's make that the overnight parking for homeless, I said, no, not until we get that mortgage paid off. So they ended up over at Kansas Avenue.
I actually thought Kansas Avenue was going to be a great thing, but the problem is they were paying people to oversee it, and a lot of things weren't getting done. I personally thought it was a good vote also. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location in Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Saturday and has a dump station for your RV. To learn more, call Delta Liquid Energy, 805-239-0616, or go online to deltaliquidenergy.com.
Hello, my name's Barry Oxford, president of BDO Financial on Main Street in Templeton. For over 30 years, our focus has been principal-protected and tax-advantaged retirement plan development. We believe that education and knowledge is power. Did you know the 2017 tax cuts end in 2 years, and taxes will be a lot higher for all of us? That's knowledge. There's never been a better time than now to convert to a Roth IRA. We are the only ones on the Central Coast that can do a Roth conversion without reducing your principal. And that's all tax-free. Order your no-cost Roth conversion estimate at BDOfinancial.com and divorce the IRS without ever reducing your principal. That's BDOfinancial.com or call 805-434-6971. That's 805-434-6971. Now that's power. Accountants and financial professionals are more than welcome too.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Since 1966, Hammond Overhead Door Company has provided residential garage doors that offer more than just a strong and secure way to close your garage. They also add beauty and value to your home. Hammond Overhead Door has the right garage door to complement your home and your budget. Hammond Overhead Door Company. Call 238-0524 or go to HammondOverheadDoor.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey. I'm your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. And today we've been talking about a number of things in the county budget, some of the homeless issues, the Bob Jones Trail. I have both SLO County Supervisor Debbie Arnold and businessman Eric Gorham. He is a very efficient government watchdog. We are talking about a number of things in the county, but now I kind of want to go to a new idea. Debbie, what's coming up in the future? What do you have on your upcoming agendas?
Yeah, thanks, Karen. We have a meeting coming up on the 18th, June 18th, and after that, we'll have a couple weeks. We'll go dark for a kind of a summer break, but there are a few interesting things on this upcoming budget. And for listeners that are interested in this sort of thing, you can just go to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors and click on meetings and agendas, and then you can look up June 18th and go right down the list. Item number 32 on our agenda, and it's actually on the consent, meaning the consent agenda usually holds things that are non-controversial, but this next meeting is going to be interesting. It has more consent items on it than I've ever seen. 65 things.
65 consent.
Have you ever? So,
I say one thing?
Sure.
I, as a reporter, and I've been a reporter a long time, When government doesn't want people to see things, they throw them on before like 4th of July or right before Thanksgiving. When that last meeting before the holiday, this is common. They jam-pack it, and it's often full of controversial things.
Well, there's the things that jumped out at me, and this agenda just came out, so I haven't read all the staff reports, but we do have several things on from the clerk recorder's office, including item number 32, which is a request to approve 5-year, that could be 10 years, contract with the Dominion voting systems, meaning the Dominion voting machines. And I know lots of people I talked to, and me included, have been concerned about the changes in election processes. Have all the changes we have made our election process more secure or less secure? And I usually tend to go with the less secure, but the machines are part of that. And item number 32, Dominion voting systems. So people might be interested in reading that. And then for the North County folks, items 33 through 38 have to do with the groundwater sustainability plans throughout the county, most of them in the Paso Robles area.
On the consent. This is all on consent.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then there were several other things. The county taking over the responsibilities for fire from the Oceano CSD. I mean, these are big ticket items that usually would, I think, maybe have a little more discussion, but they're on the agenda this next next.
So I wonder if anything's getting pulled.
Yeah.
One of the things, as I think everyone's noticed, we used to have efficient elections. We would know quickly who won. Now it's about a month later, and you're actually bored with it.
Yeah, it's interesting because, Debbie brought up the security of these things, which, you know, not everybody agrees they're secure. Other people say they're the most secure thing ever. But we used to pretty much know every election the next day. If it was really close, if you would have looked at, say, a Bruce Gibson and a Bruce Jones, that probably would have took a little longer because it was off by 13 votes. But generally, if it was a couple hundred votes, and a lot of times our elections are 600 votes apart, 400 votes apart, usually under 1,000 on a supervisor race. But we knew the next day, or if not, sometimes that night. Now it can take up to a month. They have to certify, I think, 30 days later. I could be wrong. But it takes that. We can actually hold an election and do a one or two recounts in the time it takes to find out for these machines to count the vote. And they're supposed to be so much more efficient. I guess I don't understand the argument. And nobody's been able to explain. When I bring that very point up, it's more efficient. Well, how? I don't understand. Like, we could do two recounts. And, like, how much money is this costing to have all these people in there for a month?
Yeah, things have changed. And you're right. It used to be exciting on election night. I ran for office 4 times in this county, and you'd have your election night party and watch the results roll in and have a pretty good idea by the time you went to bed that night which way the elections went. And that's changed a lot. When it comes to the machines, I voted no on this before. I have never been a fan of the machine counting, and I'm not a computer person, and I admit that, but I spent a year or so around 2021 just trying to really get out there and talk to people that design software, people that have worked in the industry, and you never find anyone that'll say any machine is not unhackable. You know, right. They'll say stuff.
I remember how hard it was for you to get the Dominion guy to admit that. That famous Tuesday night where you guys went into, like, I don't know, 10 o'clock or
yeah.
something.
No, nobody ever says that it's not, but they say things like, that would never happen. But, you know, yeah.
Well, the interesting part, I think a lot of people think there was hand counting before. We call it hand counting, but it was still a machine, basically a Scantron machine.
Yeah.
It had no intelligence. These machines are very intelligent, so I understand the argument. We went from a machine that simply counts a dot to a machine
That's connected
to the internet.
Internet. And, so I have worries about that. But we've been, so it's funny, I guess I can always remember this, is the 12 years I've been there. We started out the very first thing talking about centralizing our voting. And I think I think John Pashong was with me on this. I would say things like, you know, the people in Creston or Shandon, they've gone to the same voting polling place, the school or the church, and people in the rural parts of our county, we want to keep it that way. But the centralizing meant that your election, your voting time went longer, and you voted into voting boxes, or you came down to the clerk's office, came into town and went to the clerk's office, and that sort of, all ballots would be mailed out, and you'd have a certain amount of time. So we've done away with Election Day. We've done away with the neighborhood, the volunteer forces that used to, in other words, elections used to be a civic duty for many people.
Yeah, the poll workers out there.
Our society, yeah, and all come together and pull off these elections. But things have certainly changed. And then, of course, you know, we're connected, tied to the hip to the Secretary of State in Sacramento. We know how well those state agencies, you know, efficient. But they don't always do a great job of keeping their voter rolls clean. So when we're mailing out ballots based on those, oftentimes we have a lot more ballots out there in the world than we have voters. And I just think that we've moved to a system that we couldn't possibly expect to be more secure and provide more accurate information.
Oh, correct. And I can't remember. I was listening to somebody the other day, and they were talking about just in this county how many more ballots than registered voters go out. And, you know, people don't realize that, but there's people that come in. I'm usually at the headquarters during elections trying to help out a little bit, because people bring in their ballots, and there's people that get 2 ballots, 3 ballots, 4 ballots, 5 ballots. And, you know, the other part of this is in our county, it's first in. So if I get your ballot and I fill it out and they believe my signature, there's not much you can do about it.
Well, speaking of signatures, we moved away from voter ID. We ask for ID for so many things in society, but not voting. Is voting not important?
Right.
I understand that.
And honestly, and I don't want to get too far off into the weeds, but when I look at this, I did an argument on another show a few years ago when they went into not needing IDs, etc. And the argument that I got was really interesting, because what they were saying is minorities basically weren't smart enough to get IDs, which I find insulting. I mean, if I was in one of those groups, I'd find it absolutely, I'm not smart enough to get an ID. It's really ridiculous, some of the arguments they've used. And, you know, basically verifying a signature should not be that hard. And they do it on, you know, when they go through the machines, they have, I think it's pretty much automated at this point, but they are looking at it. You can watch it happen if you want to go in and watch the process.
I've always voted by mail for the convenience, but you still had to show an ID to get on that list to get your ballot mailed to you. So I'm not against mailing your ballot back in. But when we did polling places and so forth, most people, it eliminated the having to check signatures.
Yeah.
It eliminated a whole lot of work when people came to the polls with their ID, marked
the ballot. And the process became easier for the people trying to get elected, because you used to be able to walk into those polls and see who didn't vote, and you can get on the phone, start calling people.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to add to the conversation?
Oh, just on the voting machines tabulating. I recall hearing a report from Georgia about maybe a couple weeks ago, where they discovered that about 12,000 of their votes in the last election, which run through the machines, the counting machines twice and tabulated twice.
And there's actually a lot of information on that little barcode. When you mail in your vote, there's a lot. When they scan that barcode, there's a lot of information about whose vote is inside there. I'll just leave it at that. I'll let your imagination go from that, because they can garner a lot of information just from the barcode on the envelope.
Yeah, well, it was a particular certain 12,000 or so votes.
That's what I'm alluding to. You can get a lot of information just from the barcode.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I just thought I'd throw that in there since you're on that subject.
Thank you for calling
in. Thank you.
Yeah, this is, I do miss knowing who is elected right away.
Mm-hmm.
I
those election night parties suck. You don't get anywhere.
It's not the same excitement that it used to be, not even close.
Right.
I want to thank you. We'll be back. I'll be back on Wednesday and Thursday. And Debbie, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Karen.
Great.
Oh, well, it's fun as usual. Thank you.
I mean, Eric.
Yeah, whoever that guy is.
This hour of Sound Off on AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM was brought to you by Farm Supply, serving your fencing, irrigation, and livestock needs since 1950. Farm Supply, for the farmer in you.
AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.